welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, November 6, 2020. The governor of South Sudan's central bank addresses the economic crisis in his country.
We will raise the policy rate, that's the interest rate of the central bank, the rate that we use when we are lending to government or to commercial banks. We will raise that rate immediately to 15%.
And residents of Juba Town complain about delays in getting COVID-19 test results.
I followed up the thing from morning to 3, and then they told me that your sample is not there. At last, they told me to go back to the IDU unit and get another sample. That process also is likely to take me another 3 days, yet I've been here for 4 days already.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's new governor of the central bank says his institution is adopting new measures to control the country's worsening inflation. Dier Tong Ngor says the bank's finance intelligence unit will clamp down on money laundering. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
In his first news conference since his swearing in as the new Bank of South Sudan governor earlier this week, Dier Tong Ngor said the new measures are aimed at stabilizing the economy.
We will raise the policy rate, that's the interest rate of the central bank, the rate that we use when we are lending to government or to commercial banks. We will raise that rate immediately to 15%. Also, we will increase the reserve requirement ratio, that is by law imposed on the deposit of commercial bank, to 20%. Third, we are increasing the cash ratio, that's the ratio of cash liquidity that need to be kept by banks in their vault in order to meet the demands of their depositors. We are going to increase that rate to 20%.
Tong says the Bank of South Sudan will also step up its supervisory role by continuously monitoring commercial banks and will crack down on money laundering.
We will continue to support the financial intelligence unit so that we implement this framework, because that will also help the building of confidence in our banking system.
Tong says the new measures were approved yesterday in an extraordinary meeting of the Monetary Policy Committee of the Central Bank. He says the meeting was called to address the rapid depreciation of the South Sudanese pound and the country's high inflation. Tong says the Monetary Committee noted the economy has been battered by the COVID-19 pandemic, low prices, and what he calls the constrained financial system performance, particularly in the banking sector.
It is a reaction, it's a policy response to a certain development in monetary framework of the country.
Over the past 2 months, the South Sudanese pound has continued to fall in value against the U.S. dollar, dropping nearly 50% in the parallel market rate. The dollar used to exchange for 310 South Sudanese pounds 2 months ago. Now it exchanges for 550 South Sudanese pounds. In July, the central bank lowered the interest rate and the cash reserve ratio. At the time, the bank lowered the interest rate by 3 percentage points from 13% and reduced the cash reserve ratio from 15% to 10%. Governor Tong says all of the changes are short-term measures that must be sustained with achievable long-term plans. He says the production of goods and services is inadequate in South Sudan, which makes it difficult to control the inflation rate.
Our main problem, the main problem of our economy is issue of production. And of course, that's long-term. It's medium to long term. We need to be producing, because if you don't produce, really, it's very difficult for you to stop inflation, especially if we take South Sudan as a small open economy like us, depending mostly on importing so many things.
The drop in international oil prices has hit South Sudan as income from oil accounts for 98% of the country's budget. Tong notes that South Sudan imports most of its goods and services. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Some South Sudanese are complaining about delays in getting COVID-19 test results at the National Public Health Laboratory in Juba. Some of the residents of Juba town say the process is too slow. Kwai Manyok, a South Sudanese student, says he could not travel for his studies in Nairobi, Kenya as scheduled because his test results was misplaced. For VOA News, Onen Walter Solomon reports from Juba.
Kwai Manyok, a South Sudanese student, says he went to the National Public Health Laboratory to be tested for COVID-19 so he could obtain the mandatory COVID-free certificate to travel to Nairobi, Kenya for his studies. Manyok told South Sudan in Focus he went to the facility on Friday, October 23rd, when the COVID-19 rapid response team registered him and asked him to return the following day. Manyok says he was tested the 24th, which made him hopeful he would get his results by the 25th and could travel to Nairobi on the 26th. He says that didn't happen. On Tuesday, October 27th, when he returned to laboratory to collect his results, he says a worker informed him his results and sample were nowhere to be found.
I followed up the thing from morning to 3, and then they told me that your sample is not there. At last, they told me to go back to the IDU unit and get another sample. That process also is likely to take me another 3 days, yet I've been here for 4 days already.
31-year-old Esham Ahmed Abdul Nabi says he was tested for COVID-19 at the National Public Health Laboratory and received his results 3 days later. Ahmed says COVID testing in South Sudan is full of delays, unlike in other countries he has visited.
In Sudan one day, in Dubai one day, I'm going to India, I'm going to China, I'm going to Italy. One day, morning, I'm coming to sign my name. After 15 minutes, I'm going to check my sample. After 5 hours, they're sending me my
Professor Simon Deng, a supervisor at the National Public Health Laboratory in Juba, admits there are delays in testing, which he says are due in part to workers using a manual rather than electronic system to process results. Deng told doctors gathered at the 2020 Medical Symposium on South Sudan's COVID-19 response last week that the government installed more testing machines in the laboratory and doctors can now test nearly 800 samples a day, but the laboratory has only 4 refrigerators to store samples, while the number of travelers needing tests increases.
Lots of samples because we have 4 fridges in the lab. The samples are many, and that's why sometimes, you know, samples are lost. Now, if we want to see sample tested 4 days ago, if you ask for it, you don't find it. Yeah, because of poor system.
Deng says the testing process is not easy.
There is, you know, high load on colleagues who are working there because these are the people doing the extraction, doing the master mix, doing the addition of samples, doing the testing, and then also in interpretation of the results.
Deng says if the manual system in the laboratory is upgraded to an electronic system, the testing process would be much quicker. For VOA News, I am Onen Walter Solomon in Juba.
The Food and Agriculture Organization and World Food Program warn of rising levels of hunger, with some countries on the brink of famine. 4 countries, Burkina Faso, northeastern Nigeria, South Sudan, and Yemen, are at particular risk. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The World Food Program reports more than 100 million people globally already are suffering from severe food shortages. It warns that number is expected to increase by another 121 million without urgent action to combat this rising tide of global acute hunger. A new assessment by the UN Food and Agriculture Organization and World Food Program has identified 20 countries as acute food insecurity hotspots. The report warns four of these hotspots, Burkina Faso and West Africa's Sahel region, northeastern Nigeria, South Sudan, and Yemen, could soon slip into famine if conditions continue to deteriorate over the coming months. FAO senior food crises analyst Luca Russo says there's no evidence of a famine occurring now in these countries.
Essentially, the moment you declare a famine, it's already too late to act, in the sense that we saw this in the past with Somalia when the famine was declared. Already 260,000 people had died because of the famine. So we want to raise an early warning before a famine occurs, and we want also to highlight some of the key factors that need to be monitored.
The report cites intensification of violence, economic crises exacerbated by COVID-19, weather extremes, and a lack of humanitarian access as key drivers of hunger. These factors, it notes, have caused the number of desperately hungry people to almost triple since 2019 in Burkina Faso. They also are behind food insecurity and high levels of acute malnutrition in children in Yemen. Russo tells VOA that insecurity and hunger are rising in Borno State in northeastern Nigeria, where Boko Haram militants remain a dangerous force.
These are areas where basically today there is no possibility of having humanitarian access. So that means that the people are left on their own in a situation where, in which many of them are displaced. And this is what can trigger the famine. In South Sudan, we are talking of Jonglei. Jonglei is a state, and there is a bit better access, but there are floods and conflicts and so on. People are displaced.
The UN Food Agency say the world is at a catastrophic turning point. Unless urgent action is taken now, they warn the world could experience its first outbreak of famine since it was last declared in 2017 in parts of South Sudan. That famine affected 5.5 million people and put more than 200,000 children suffering acute malnutrition at risk of death. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, how is the social media tackling misinformation in the United States? Find out more after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Describe a perfect day.
A perfect day is when I wake up in the morning without any challenges. I have my family around me. I go to work, come back without any mishaps or difficulties or any hangovers.
A perfect day for me would be a day without any stress, without traffic, without any sickness, without any pertinent need. That would be a perfect day for me.
My perfect day, when I get off and then I come out, I do all my assignment in the office or in the other aspect of my curriculum activities.
Maybe watch a movie so I could fall asleep, you know, just watch something for laughs, a comedy, and that's just my typical perfect day.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Moudou. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1-202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1-202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. With the elections-related emotions running high in the United States, Twitter, Facebook, and other internet farms are trying different ways to address misinformation on their sites. Michelle Quinn reports.
As the United States grapples with the results of Election Day, an online battle has been taking place on Twitter, Facebook, and sites like LinkedIn over information, some say misinformation, about the election and its results. There are a lot of stories out there. Fadi Karan is the campaign director of Avaaz, a nonprofit activism group that tracks misinformation campaigns.
False claims about voter fraud. We're seeing a lot of, just a flood of such claims. Calls to violence or calls to protests or calls to speak, you know, fight conspiracies that are just not real. And that is dangerous. It's a democratic emergency. And we're terrified about these false claims further polarizing the American people and leading to a collapse in trust in our institutions.
Twitter is trying to stop the spread of misinformation by labeling some tweets and preventing their ability to spread. Facebook is labeling posts and pointing users to its election site. On Thursday, it removed a Stop the Steal group used to organize protests against vote counting. Google-owned YouTube is posting a label on some videos, but leaving up some, making claims that appear to violate its policy. Misinformation about the vote count is also being posted in Spanish on Twitter and Facebook. One Spanish language theme was that President Donald Trump is being robando, or robbed, of a win in the election. These steps signal a new willingness by internet firms to step into the maelstrom of facts and misinformation, even when prominent people are speaking. Efforts like these are crucial for citizens to trust the final election results, according to experts. Teresa Payton is a former White House chief information officer.
The more we can tamp down these disinformation and misinformation campaigns hitting Americans so that we can believe that the system is actually working for us. Because at the end of the day, we're the ones who own the system. We're a government of the people, by the people, for the people. And so we deserve some level of transparency here.
Despite these steps, some feel internet firms should be doing more, such as retroactive corrections. Fadi Karan.
For everyone who has liked or engaged or seen the piece of misinformation before Facebook puts a label on it, they should send them a correction saying, sorry, we have, through our fact checkers, detected that this is false.
One thing is clear. As Americans await final results, the internet sites will continue to be ripe ecosystems for real and fake information. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Thousands of Cameroonians in the northwest town of Kumbo are demanding the release of a Catholic cardinal and a traditional ruler who were both abducted Thursday night by suspected rebels. The 90-year-old Cardinal Christian Tumi was returning to Kumbo with Chief Sem Binglo of the So people when the pair were taken. It is the second abduction in Kumbo this week after gunmen on Tuesday took at least 11 teachers. Esmoki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
The Roman Catholic Church in Kumbo says hundreds of supporters assembled at the cathedral Friday, calling for the immediate release of Cardinal Priest Christian Tumi and the chief of the Nso people, Sem Binglo. The church says the 90-year-old cardinal and the chief known as FON, were abducted Thursday night with their delegation just south of the town. Genesis Lukong, the Secretary General of the Catholic Men's Association, spoke to VOA by telephone from Kumbu in Cameroon's northwest.
These are authorities that have been ordained by God and placed to look over his people. And so it is high time all the population, not only the Sotman, but everybody in the northwest should go out today and let the Fon and the Cardinal be released. This is something outrageous.
Administrative officials in Kumbo's Bui administrative unit confirmed the attack and blamed Anglophone rebels. The cardinal was released Friday morning, but the Minglo remains captive. Sub-chief of the Nsop people, Fidelis Chin, says Chief Minglo's health has been waning and he needs regular medical care.
Any struggle that touches the Fon also, that touches our tradition, that touches the religion, is against the soul people. I call on also enemies, wherever they are, to come out. Let's tell these amber boys that enough is enough.
It's not the first time that separatists have abducted Chief Minglo. Minglo fled the area 3 years ago after rebels abducted him 3 times and killed 2 of his sons. The rebels accused him of collaborating with the central government. Colonel Tumi led talks with the rebels each time to secure the chief's safe return. Catholic Lawrence Nsabinla was part of the negotiations.
It is not normal to abduct a man of God at his age. And then they abducted him with His Royal Highness the Fon of Nsop, who was coming back to be reinstated in his dynasty. Two important personalities for the Christians and for the Nsop man. This is something that the Christians and the Nsop man has to take serious and put an end to all these devilish actions.
The abduction of the chief and the cardinal is the second such incident in Kumbo this week. On Tuesday, gunmen attacked a Presbyterian school and abducted 11 teachers. The teachers were released Thursday unharmed. The rebels have been fighting in Western Cameroon since 2017 to carve out an English-speaking state from the majority French-speaking nation. The United Nations says the ongoing violence has claimed more than 3,000 lives and displaced more than 530,000. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And now for some music. South Sudanese Afrobeat musician Daniel Mbonyonyesi Los Ticos, whose stage name is DJ Scent, has released a single about the poor state of roads across South Sudan. His latest release, entitled Sika Gudele, has captured airwaves in Juba. DJ Scent says he knows the poor roads contributes to the persistent food insecurity in South Sudan. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
In this song, 28-year-old DJ Scent sings about the poor roads in the capital and across the country. He focuses specifically on the Gudele Highway, which is riddled with potholes and a ramshackle bridge called Kuburi Abuba that causes traffic jams lasting several hours even when there is no rush hour.
Whatever I sang in the song is what is happening in the country. It's not like something that's not there, it's there. Even right now, if you try to go that side of Gudele, you will spend like 3 hours before you reach your place.
DJ Scent was born and raised in Yambio, Western Equatoria, but relocated to Juba in 2009 to pursue his music career. His hit, Sika Gudele, released a month ago, is getting big airplay in Juba and hit more than 1,000 views on his YouTube channel even before the video was released. DJ Sen says he spent more than 3 months researching the song by taking trips around Juba and across the country to see how the lack of roads and poorly maintained roads affect citizens. He says poor roads contribute to the persistent food insecurity in parts of South Sudan, because while some rural areas produce bumper crops of food, farmers are unable to transport their fruits and vegetables to other areas where people need it most. DJ Sen says he wants to raise awareness about bad roads and other critical issues facing South Sudan with his hit song.
I went to Wau. I found that we have enough food in Wau. I went to Yei. We have enough food in Yei. Also, the same thing in Western Kotela and in Bor. We have so many fish, but people who live in the capital, we are suffering from hunger. While we have a lot of food in the states, but the issue is we don't have roads, good roads which connect Juba to those states. Otherwise, our people were going to be able to transport the foodstuffs to the capital.
DJ Sen says if the people living in rural areas can access markets in towns like Juba, they will be more productive because it would give them the opportunity to earn more money from farming. He says since he cannot send the message to what he calls the high table, he uses his music to send it to the people.
If we take this message serious, trust me, in 5 years' time, we will not bring food from foreign countries. Because if we connect our own roads around South Sudan, we will have enough food in the capital.
DJ Sen also sings about social and cultural issues like relationships and marriage. His other popular songs include Numbet Mara, which criticizes men who leave their families to live or spend nights in single and independent women's houses. His song, In-Law, Why Are You Beating My Sister, is self-explanatory. DJ Sen says the popularity of his previous songs motivates him to shake up more citizens to improve the situation in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now leave you with that song by DJ Sent about the state of roads across South Sudan.
It's in time, DJ Sent, Mr. No Rest. Yeah, BLG Massing Gidam, yeah. Slaughter, Sikabu Dele Kulu Karabu, eh. Jelly Salao, Shawar Piju Bambulu Karabu, eh. Jelly Salao, Shawar Piju Numbulu Karabu, eh. Keli salau, kamanda rajuba kulu karabu we. Keli salau, tika rumbe, tika kwajok, tika awil, tika yambio, tika torit, tika biyei, tika yei, manimule, tika bor, tika jonglei, tika wow, tika malakai. Keli salau, shawari de. Asan bele de biraba guang guang, kalima salao shawari de, bele de ma biraba guang guang. Ikwa budele bulu karabuwe, jeli salao, shawari piju bambulu karabuwe. Jeli salao, shawari piju nungulu karabuwe. Jeli salao, ikamantara juba bulu karabuwe. Jeli salao, nasi medina juba bikore sedi midiyan. Nina indu wakil bara mijuba, lakin biji buke. Haru Jackson indu tamakin ketir. Hey hey, yambio indu manga ketir. Hey hey, terekeka indu leben malian. Hey hey hey, euro indu dura malian. Oh oh, lakin biji buke mijuba, biji buke.
We have been listening to DJ Sent with the song Sika Gudele. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you must leave your house. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Jawar fi dakli hila ho batal shadi ho batal shadi eh ho batal shadi batal shadi ho batal shadi eh ana tabam dilu arabiya bi gara.